So the title of the talk is derived from title of a song by Frank Zappa a long time ago. He wrote a song called Help, I'm a Rock. And the title of the talk tonight is Help, I'm a Cloud. It's a deep truth of the Buddha Dharma that all our experiences that we hold so solid and feel so constructed are clouds passing through our world, our field of mind-body. All experiences are of the nature of a cloud that passes through. And at the back is the deep blue sky of our consciousness that is aware of the clouds that pass through. I think that's why traditionally consciousness is given the color blue. You see with the pictures of the icons in of Shiva and also of the Buddha, always got a blue space around a blue circle, and that's Shyam, blue space, the sky of consciousness. That experience, that understanding, that understanding of the world brings a huge freedom. A huge freedom. I would say almost unimaginable freedom. And yet, I realize that many of you may be saying, yes, okay, but all that is very spiritual, sublime, subtle stuff. But what's my back pain? How do I get rid of my back pain? Thing is, that is how you get rid of the back pain. I am telling you, and the Dharma is telling you, that is the way you get rid of the back pain. And I'll try and explain it if I can. There's a Nate, it's a truth that doesn't just belong to the Dharma, that everything is in the nature of passing, changing, and a construction that is constructed and deconstructed. We build our world constantly. We never stop building our world. As you are listening to me now, your mind, our mind, is constantly busy, intensely, intensely busy, confirming where is our body, where are we in relation to everyone else, what is the meaning of the words, what is the sound of words that hearing, what's it doing, constructing a meaning, constructing a self. That you are there, and I am there, and he is there, and we are here, and this is the center. It's a dynamic process. We take the self, for example, as something pre-existing. We take it for granted. It's not taken for granted. Any neurologist would tell you that the mind is busy like hell just making sure that the self is known as self. That the selfing is happening all the time. The mind is constantly busy just holding things as they are. And then we believe things are as they are. And we forget that the process is dynamic, that the mind is constantly doing it, and if the mind stops for 1 second, we don't exist. We don't know where we are. We go to sleep, we're gone. We we drink alcohol, we have Alzheimer's disease. Look, gone. Where's self? Where's the world? Where's this? It's constantly busy. And this is not just, as I say, in the Dharma, the identity in many psychology, in Western psychology theories of identity, is that the identity is a constant dynamic construction built by society or built by everything else. That the self is built by everything else. And that the self needs to be continually built and rebuilt by everything else. And we are constantly checking with each other to make sure that we know who we are. And our senses then, based on memory, go out into the world, check everything, say, yeah, everything's okay, nothing's wrong, nothing's disturbing, I'm a self, nice. But the senses also do the same with the back pain. There's a back pain, I see it, have to do something about it, it's a problem, there it is, checking it again, that's called pain, I know what pain is, have to deal with it. And it's constantly checking and constantly constructing and constantly reconstructing everything. The mind, our mind is a map of the world. It raises the question, what is the world? If our mind is a map of the world, so there's nothing else but map. That's all I see is map that I made. So what's the world? I look sometimes, my dog, when I go walking in the morning, my dog's world seemed to be made up of kaki and pee-pee. The only map that my dog has is there's pee-pee of another dog, and there's the kaki of another dog, and there's the pee-pee of another dog. And I sometimes think, what a map that dog must have. Just a world of kaki and pee-pee. Woo! So, the Buddha, by the way, again and again said, the world is a construction that we make. Don't ask me what it really is. That's what he said. Doesn't help you. You will never know it in this way. You can never think it out. Western philosophers say the same thing. There's no Western philosopher that will say, I know what's really, 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 really real. No one. Nobody can say that. I think that we can slowly begin to understand the way we construct the world, even in a retreat like this. I mean, just think of some of the things that have happened. We react to the air conditioning. Okay, this is always a good example in retreats. It's too hot, it's a problem, I'm pissed off, I'm too hot, the air conditioning is wrong. Please turn it off. And somewhere or other, the retreat invites you to say, wait a minute, what am I doing with this air conditioning that makes things too hot? What am I doing with it? Turning the view around and say, I am making, out of experiences, a story. I am constructing a story called too hot, uncomfortable, turn it off. I am constructing anger. Anger comes up as a response. And the whole thing is in me. And I am building a construction around something in the external world that I can't control. I wish I could control it, but I can't. The construction that's built, we normally don't know it. But in the retreat, we might, by someone pointing out, Rega, wait a minute, it is your construction, take responsibility for what you are doing with an uncomfortable sensation called air conditioning. Take responsibility Because you're making that construction out of it. You're building response. You're building, it's too hot. You're building, I don't like it. You're building anger. You're building, this retreat is terrible. I would be enlightened except for the air conditioning. It's a construct. We only know, begin to know that by a process of looking. The problem is that if we don't see it, the constructions seem like reality. If we don't see the way we make the constructions, and they are made, they are castles made out of sand, like a child is making a castle out of sand on the beach. If we don't see it and we think it's real, we also think our suffering is real. And we also put ourselves in a prison. And we don't know that we made the prison. We put ourselves in a prison. Things are like this. Suffering is there. I have a problem. I have a psychological issue. I have a physical issue. I have a social issue. I have a self issue. I'm like this. I'm like that. I hate to get a bit serious here, but I think one of the good examples of this is where there's a social agreement and there's a social self, especially built around suffering. And one of the good, the best examples is of us with the social construction of the Holocaust, of the Shoah. And it's a construction that we also have to take responsibility for, that we are what we make out of it. What we do with it, how we construct with it a solid, seeming solid thing called the Shoah, which is embedded in the group consciousness as a thing, as a story. And then all the results that come from it, all the pain that comes from it, all the anxiety that comes from it, all the defensiveness that comes from it, all the obsession with army and with everyone's attacking us and with sadness and misery and loss and pain that goes on and on and on, and we construct it and we make it holy and we turn it into a museum and we make it holy and suffer inside this construction. And I think it's a very good example because it's like a wave going through, catching everybody, that we have to learn it in school from the age one. And it stops us seeing anything else except our suffering. A good example is the attempt to stop the acknowledgement of the Nakba. Because Jewish suffering is so big and so there, we can't acknowledge anyone else's suffering. So the Nakba out. And it closes us inside our pain. Nakba is the Palestinian people's disaster. So we have to just see things as they are. We don't have to forget. We don't have to wipe the memory. We don't have to say memory is bad. Memory is not bad. Memory is really important for us. We need to remember. We need to see what happened. We need to understand. We need to not forget. There's nothing wrong with memory. But it's just a memory. That's what it is. And if we look at it, we see it's a construction in the memory based on what happened. And here we have it. And sometimes it's there, and sometimes it's not there. And sometimes we remember it and we cry, and the next minute we're in joy and freedom. But if we turn it into this huge construction, it's on our shoulders all the time, weighing us down and not allowing us to see anyone else's suffering. There's a story. Because Yonatan, you gave a story of Cossacks. So I also want to give a story of Cossacks. I think maybe Jack tells this story. I don't know where I read it. There's in a Jewish village in Russia, a Jew goes out in the morning on his way to Beit Knesset, and he's been doing this 20 years. And along comes a Cossack and says, "Where are you going?" And he says, "I don't really know." So the Cossack said, "What? You've been doing this 20 years? You're lying. You're playing with me." And he takes him off to prison. Puts him in prison. As the door is closing, the Jew says, "You see, you don't really know." The Dharma invites us to see everything, everything, as constructions that we construct, as dynamic, as changing, as fluid and moving. The sun, then the rain. The rain's pouring outside, then it stops. If we were obsessed with our own construction, we would just say, well, like the English say, never stops raining, only raining, no sun. True. But in truth, if we watch things, they're not like that. Everything is changing, everything is moving, everything is adapting. It particularly affects our body. Our body is where we practice, and our body is where we begin to see this. Our body is a place where we have this in a rather extreme way. On the one hand, we can't imagine our body to be a construction, dynamic. We need to feel it's solid, it's identified. We want to know where every piece is. We want to know the boundaries. We want to know that it's okay and not sick and hurting. We want to all the time confirm that it's a solid thing. I can trust it and rely on it. But the body is also where we can, it's closest to us, where we can begin to see the dynamic. That is actually, body is actually a kind of community. It's a community of elements. And I don't mean just the chaydakim in here, but a community of elements that is constantly moving and changing. Air coming in, oxygen coming in, carbon dioxide going out, molecules changing, bits going out, bits coming in, every cell changing every day. We don't see that. Everything, every experience of the body is different every minute. Every moment. The mind is different every moment. The whole thing is just a field, a cloud. But we don't see it. We want to see it. It's solid, reliable, we can forget it. I mean, there's a small exercise we can do now that I do sometimes to show this. Just look at your hand for a moment. And look at it briefly, just for a moment. Here it is, identify it as a hand, I know it's my hand, and I can see its boundary, right? And its character, its skin, and so on, and I know it's my hand. So now let's close our eyes and put the two hands together. And feel the touch. And feel where it is. Feel the pressure of the two hands, kind of electricity. What is the sensation? really the sensation of touch and pressure. Go inside. Okay. I think we may have felt there no longer is a hand. There no longer is a boundary to this hand. We don't know where it starts and where it stops. We don't give it a label. We don't even maybe know it's so much ours. We experience just sensations, and it's not even possible to give a name to those sensations. What are they? The best we can do is kind of image like electricity or vibration or something. That's just a word. We can't even identify what it is exactly. So when we look at a simple thing, here we have a hand. Everyone knows what's a hand, except small children. But when we look at it, part of it, or begin to go inside, the thing goes to pieces. The thing that we call hand, the sensations by which we know that we have a hand. Without those sensations, we wouldn't know that we have a hand. When we look at those sensations that tell us we have a hand, we can't even know what they are. We can't even say what they are. And they're changing all the time. So the mind is making a summary, a rather quick one. Hand. Okay, I know you. Right, don't think about it anymore. But if we really look, this hand is a dynamic which we can't even give a name to. We can't give a boundary to it. We can't say it's stable from one moment to the next. So this shows a way which we can get out, we can deal with the suffering, the pain, and the difficulty of our life. It does show a way in which we can deal with the back pain. And it does show a way in which we can deal with the emotional pain. It does show a way in which we can deal with the existential pain of our life. And that is not by trying to get rid of anything, not by stopping anything, but by understanding that things get rid of themselves. By understanding that things go by themselves, we don't actually need to attack our problems. And that's very special to Dharma. It is not so much part of, shall we say, Western psychology or Western view. It is very much, I would say, spiritual and especially Dharma. The emphasis on understanding that things go by themselves, that things change by themselves. So basically, there's nothing to worry about. There's a Zen story that I told in my group today that is relevant because emotions came up as an issue. And the story goes like this. A student comes to his Zen teacher and says, I have a lot of anger. Can you help me deal with my anger? And the Zen teacher said, okay. Bring the anger, and we'll deal with it together. So the student said, okay, but at this minute, I don't have any anger right now, so we can't deal with it right now. So the teacher says, okay, so when you do have anger, then bring it. So then we deal with it. So the student said, well, yes, but my room is 15 minutes away from your room, and in the 15 minutes, probably the anger will go. So how can we deal with it? So the teacher said, "Well, you see, you just did deal with it. If you can't even keep the anger going, if you want to, the anger comes and goes when it wants. You can't even hold on to it if you want to. The anger comes and goes when it wants. It comes and goes because the universe." Makes it come and go. It comes and goes because conditions make it come and go. So that's the end of the problem. the name in Pali of the understanding, of this understanding that we construct out of a flow, a world, and that if we see it clearly, we see the world is only flowing and changing, including ourselves. And that understanding is called anicca, change, changeability, change. And there is a very big emphasis put on this as a focus of our practice. The Buddha said, it's very, very helpful to lead a spiritual life, but not as helpful as 10 minutes of unconditional love. 10 minutes of unconditional love is very, very important and helpful, but it's not as helpful as 1 second of the realization of anicca. I put it very high. So meditation, in our mindfulness, we are stopping and looking. When we stop and we look, we see the way we construct our world, and we see the way the world is deconstructed. We need for this some courage. We need for this some persistence. We need to sit and do it and stay and do it. It's not something that we can know philosophically or immediately. It takes some time. But it's a hugely powerful force for our freedom. We see the way a thought arises, stays, and passes away. We see the way things come and things go. We see the way a phenomena that we hold as solid, like anxiety, or depression, or anger, is actually made up of a habit of repeated construction that repeats itself again and again, but it doesn't have essential solidity. It is just something, a habit, that keeps coming back. If we look at it, we'll see it like that. It's not so difficult. It needs a bit of effort, and it needs clear seeing. What we're doing here by sitting hour after hour, meditating, being aware, being awake, watching the truth in us, is developing the power to be able to see the way the habits actually are made of free events that keep coming back and coming back and coming back. That something like anxiety is just a message that keeps coming back. It's not a thing. It's not a problem. It's not a disaster. It is just a narrative, a story, that keeps returning and returning. And slowly, slowly, we see that it's returning, we see that it's not there all the time, we see that it's dynamic, and slowly, slowly, we can feel our freedom inside it. And consciousness stays like the big blue sky. The more we do this, the more we are aware that our consciousness can contain the habits that arise and disappear, and arise and disappear, that our consciousness becomes bigger and bigger, and our container becomes bigger and bigger. So these things become less bothersome to us, because the container is bigger, we are able to hold them. So something like a repeating narrative story of anxiety, or anger, or grief, or sadness, or memory of this kind, the more we are awake and aware and practice, the more our awareness becomes big enough and awake enough and powerful enough to hold all of this stuff that is coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, and doesn't destroy us. We practice on the breath. We practice on the breath by being very aware and very awake and letting the breath come and go and come and go and containing it. We practice on the breath, and then we practice on a big wave, like sadness, loss, living and dying. It's the same. So this is the way we deal with our back pain. If we see our back pain as it really is, with the power to contain it, with a bigger awareness, the back pain arises inside consciousness like a cloud inside the big blue sky. Back pain comes up. It's a dynamic. It's not there all the time. It flows and changes. We are a partner with it. We're not against it. We don't give it importance. We don't make it the most central thing in our life. We watch this play. Back pain is play, is playfulness of life giving us uncomfortable sensations. That's all it is. It's just playful. End of problem. So, again, we don't need to stop anything or to attack anything in us. We don't need to remove anything. We don't need to get rid of anything. We don't really need to change anything, because the deeper understanding is that things don't really exist anyway as such. And Vipassana is really about that, is to understand that we're actually already in a way liberated, because things don't really exist in themselves anyway. They don't have their solidity that we think they do. And when we discover that, then the freedom happens by itself. We don't really need to seek freedom. We just need to see the way that what we thought of as solid is not. What we thought of as a prison doesn't really have walls. The walls are made of paper, or the walls, shall we say, are made of dynamic life, not stones and concrete. There is a beautiful concept from the Dzogchen, the Tibetan spiritual tradition, mystical tradition, of what you would call self-liberation. That everything actually liberates itself. Liberation in the sense of freedom or release. That if we look at a thought carefully enough, it's gone. In a way, we can only really see the back of thoughts. We can't really see thoughts. We see them as they pass by. We don't really see the thought coming, right? We can see it kind of when it's already passed by, or when it's on its way out. That's when we catch it. And it reminds me, actually, the Sograin of Moshe in the only time in the Bible where God is Ke'ilu seen by Moshe, but God wouldn't let Moshe see his face. God said, you can see my back only. And I think that, you know, reality, we only see its back. We really only see reality as it's passed by. We don't see its face. So things, when we look at them properly, they liberate themselves. They self-liberate. They are innately free. Things are essentially free, and therefore we are essentially free. When we look carefully enough, everything liberates itself. Everything has in it its own freedom. Everything is not stuck. Everything just goes. And we are left free and with a big space of sky blue consciousness.